and salutations. I'm Jennifer Kennedy, the lead for quality at CHAP, and welcome to this month's ChAPcast. I'm really excited to welcome Stephanie Anderson from the Respecting Choices organization to the podcast today. Hi, Stephanie. How are you feeling?
Hi, Jennifer. I'm doing well. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited that you're here. So here's what I'd like to do to get us started. If you could introduce yourself to our listeners and then talk a little bit about the Respecting Choices organization.
Thanks. Oh, I'd love to do that. Especially because of my history. So I am proud to be a nurse leader. I have been a nurse for about 30 years now.
And, Yay, go nurses!
Yes. In that time, as a clinician, I started in the ER, OR, really couldn't find my passion in healthcare until a mentor of mine approached me and said, hey, would you like to be a supervisor in our hospice program? And I said, what's hospice? And it's embarrassing that I got through school without even knowing that. But wow, did I find my passion in healthcare, caring for individuals nearing end of life and at end of life. But I was a bit disappointed with the status quo of people really coming into hospice programs in crisis. And so I wanted to broaden. So I became a clinician in palliative care. I started an inpatient palliative care program, outpatient, pediatric, ambulatory, and then also was a care manager in home care. And so I really have this passion for the work that those of you that are likely listening to this podcast do. We worked very closely with DME, with community partners, and ultimately became the leader of the entire service line here in Iowa where I live. And that led me to become a change agent in the state, and I started a national POST program in the state of Iowa called iPOST. And in that work, I contracted with Respecting Choices, this organization that I now work with, to help us with that work, which was very successful, resulted in new legislation and statewide implementation. And then I came to work for Respecting Choices about 10 years ago as somebody helping others do the work. And then almost 4 years ago, became the executive director of the program. And through that time, also continued in my education, achieving my doctorate in nursing practice on the health systems administration side. So hopefully my background is helpful in those of you that are listening to our conversation today and the experiences that I have had and will share with you.
Wow, that's quite a path. You know, it's so important, you know, to look at the experiences that we've had and build upon them. And it's really interesting that I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to identify with that path that you've taken and that you've had your foot in a lot of different areas that sort of all come together that have meaningful application to the work that you're doing now. So I'm really excited to be talking with you today. I'm just new to looking at Respecting Choices, and I'm sorry to say that as a longtime hospice and palliative care nurse, but I didn't know a whole lot about it before I met you just a little while ago. So this might be the case with some of our listeners out there that they're not familiar with your organization, or, you know, really, depending on what they're doing, if they're in home care or even if they're in hospice, really what advanced care planning looks like, what it's all about. So I guess my first question for you, Stephanie, is like, where in the continuum of resources can we help people develop their advanced care plan?
Oh, Jennifer, it's a great question, and thank you for the comments about my history and the experiences. I completely agree, and I think I have a couple thoughts related to the resource constraints, especially through the pandemic. Of course, it became such a national issue and continues to be. So this question, I think, is very relevant. Not only to the time that we're in, but the future of healthcare. What we have found, first, let me just say, Respecting Choices, just for those of you that don't know, Respecting Choices has evidence-based programs that help people prepare to make medical decisions, which, Jennifer, you would, you know, you refer to that as advanced care planning, and help
Right.
clinicians or others that are interacting with individuals, so even a community health worker, a home health aide in the home, help any of those folks interacting with people to build the skill to align care with what matters most when decisions are made, which is shared decision making. So we would call that together person-centered decision making. From a Respecting Choices standpoint, we fulfill our mission and expand our impact by working directly with healthcare and community organizations to redesign their systems so people get tailored to what matters most to them. So if you think about that as a framework, expanding resources throughout the continuum becomes critical. We always seem to think about doctors doing advanced care planning, and absolutely doctors in home care, in healthcare, in palliative care, hospice, other realms of care outside of the hospital are an important member of the team. But you, those of you that are listening and thinking about this, think about other community-based resources that you can partner with. For example, faith-based initiatives. There is a very large faith-based initiative in Manhattan, New York, called What Matters. They use the Respecting Choices First Steps program, which is more towards healthy older adults. And it's through the Jewish Community Centers in Manhattan. They partner with the home cares and the hospices and palliative care programs, the inpatient hospitals, as a resource to be able to start inviting and motivating people to think about advanced care planning, and even learning that advanced care planning is not a checkbox, it's not a form, but it is a process. It's a communication over time.
And it's continuous, right? It's a continuous process, correct?
It is a continuous process. And so looking for other opportunities that can be a part of that continuous process. So for example, if you have a patient that is being supported by a AAA, a social worker within a AAA, absolutely they could be a part of this. You have a home health program that you're running and you're partnering under a grant where someone else is coming in the home, like Meals on Wheels. Your DME provider might even play a role in saying, hey, this is something, you know, you really might want to think about appointing and, you know, selecting and appointing somebody to speak on your behalf if and when you're unable to. So there are resources out there. It's the thinking about them, figuring out how to collaborate, and each defining their own roles so they can have the appropriate education to fulfill that role well.
So while you're talking, Stephanie, I thought, wow, here we are. You know, we're still in the COVID-19 public health emergency, and we'll see how long that's going to go. But do you think that this pandemic has gotten people to think about advanced care planning in any way?
Yes, great question. And I would say there's several different ways, some evolution in thinking that we saw. So for example, state statute advanced directive documents often talk about if you're terminal, would you want or not want life extenuating, you know, treatments? Well, that's not a useful question to ask. And we know that that doesn't work. The data is that only 25% complete advanced directives that are legal documents, and of those, they're rarely used. And part of the reason for that is because you referred to this as a process, Jennifer, people's goals change over time.
Right.
COVID was a very good example of that. So somebody that had an advanced directive that said, I would never want to be on a ventilator, changed their mind. They said, well, if I get COVID and I can recover and still be the same person I was before COVID, then I would absolutely want to try a ventilator. Or somebody said, you know, I'm pretty far along in my serious illness. If I get COVID, but I'm not hospice appropriate yet. If I get COVID, then I absolutely would want to be put on hospice and not go into the hospital. And then the other population change that we saw was younger people thinking about, oh my gosh, death became real to a lot of younger folks. And they didn't realize that, you know, whoever their decision maker was when they were under 18 and younger would not necessarily be the legal decision maker going forward. And so if they contracted COVID and lost the ability to speak for themselves for a week or two, who would they want to make those decisions for them and to have the conversations with that person about, you know, what an acceptable outcome of COVID treatment would be and what unacceptable outcomes would be, like if I contracted COVID, I'm on a ventilator and the doctor's saying I'll never know who I am or who I'm with. Is that a state that I want my body to be kept alive in or not? So it really heightened the attention to this topic.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And it kind of circles back to what you were saying earlier, is that, you know, this really should be part of the fabric of conversation with healthcare providers of people of any age, you know, not just people who are seriously ill or terminally ill. That this should just be part of the healthcare process. You know, you go in for an appointment and we're going to talk about when you're feeling good and when you're making clear decisions. You know, let's talk about what advanced care planning is. Let's start there and then, you know, sort of move down the path as that individual is ready, right?
Yeah, right. And I love the way you said that. It sounds easy. It's not. We all know that we live in a complex world. We live in a complex world, and it's one of the things that Respecting Choices is well known for worldwide, is that we don't just have education, because it's not enough to just teach somebody to say something, but you need to be able to redesign the systems to support that. So, for example, you'd use the example of in a clinic, coming into a clinic and having somebody say, well, do you have an advance directive? Well, if we can redesign that system, including the messaging, to say, what advanced care planning have you done? Who have you talked to about what's important to you? That's, you know, takes not very much more time. It's reframing that question and you can get a very different answer. But then that individual, whether it's a medical assistant or in the home environment, you know, the admitting clinician maybe asks that question. Well, they need to be prepared for a response and how to address that to continue to motivate that individual to participate in either reviewing their advanced care planning or entering into the process. And then if you do then have education across the team, so across home care, palliative care, hospice, DME, any of these individuals interacting with the patient, then it appears like an ongoing conversation. And you're using consistent language and messaging. And that is so helpful to the patient, because then they're not as frightened. Then they don't think, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me?
Why
are they bringing this up now, this one point in time? It becomes just a part of routine healthcare, just like preventative medicine would.
Yeah, it's normalized. Yeah.
It's normalized, right.
So you mentioned the term shared decision making a few minutes ago. So what is that process? What does it look like?
Yeah, shared decision making is a process in which clinicians and patients work together. And by working together, I'm meaning taking the power dynamic out of the conversation, out of the experience, to make treatment decisions in a way that balances the clinical evidence on risks and expected outcomes with the patient preferences and values. So they should be equally important in the conversation. And our program starts helping clinicians learn how to discern what matters most. And through that discernment process, going out and seeking advanced care planning information from conversations, any documentation in EHR, other resources, seeking that information, rather than starting from scratch and saying, I see you've had these conversations in the past. I want to check in and see if your goals have changed, if your preferences have changed, you know, again, what outcomes are acceptable, what aren't acceptable, rather than thinking about a treatment menu of specific decisions that people may or may not want in the future. Then they can, that clinician in that shared decision-making conversation can pull that information, discern what matters most, and better align the treatment options, because there is always, generally, there's always more than one treatment option, even if that treatment option is very aggressive management of pain or management of symptoms. It doesn't have to be a curative treatment option, of course.
Right.
And so we like to think of the current state that we're living in healthcare is doctors, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, other clinicians that are helping with decision making actually are misdiagnosing patient preferences. Mm-hmm. They're making assumptions on what they think the patient would want based on history, and they're making assumptions based on what they want for the patient. Though that's not shared decision making. Shared decision making is learning the patient preferences and then offering treatment pathways that align with those preferences.
So it sounds like an organization needs to make a conscious decision to integrate that particular approach into their culture of their organization. So would you say that, you know, it needs to start from the top down? Leadership needs to buy in, and resources need to be allotted, et cetera. How would that happen for an organization?
Yeah, thanks. It's a great and challenging question, especially in our current time with so much leadership turnover. The leaders that have stayed strong and are in their organizations working so hard to make it through whatever the other side of this pandemic, endemic looks like, there's so many competing factors for their attention. And to answer your question, absolutely, leadership matters. It's a core to our framework. We teach it. We, work with organizations to implement, starting with leadership matters. That's not just a top-down approach, though. Leadership matters levels occurs at every level. The clinicians going into the home caring for a patient are informal leaders. They need to believe in this, do their own advanced care planning, find the power in that. So then when they're talking with their clients, their patients, they know what they're talking about and they believe in this, all the way up, mid-level managers, directors, all the way up. It really is that cultural transformation that occurs. But coming to that top level leadership, we've not worked with any organization, whether it's within or outside of a community-based organization or within healthcare, that's been successful at the cultural transformation that does not have leadership buy-in, strong leaders, and it's not just at the beginning of this change management, this rapid cycle improvement to change the organization's culture, but it's over time and embedding that into dashboards and outcome measures and educational, annual competencies, et cetera. Measuring things like patient experience, provider experience, safety measures. If you provide care that's unwanted, that should be a serious safety event that should be reviewed and go for, you know, peer review. So it's at all levels, but it cannot be done without leadership buy-in and support.
Absolutely. And what I'm hearing when you're describing all this is that, you know, it's a definite add and plus to quality. So when we're talking about the advanced care planning process, what is its relationship to quality?
Yeah, thanks. you could start any number of places, and that's a huge question. How do we measure quality? There is a big national focus, as I'm sure many that are listening to this know, on patient reported outcomes, and hospice for years has done a great job in family reported outcomes, especially. Thinking about defining the quality proposition related to what you're hoping to achieve is probably a good starting point. And then mapping out an optimal advanced care planning process, and then testing that process through small tests of change. So you would start from the quality proposition, you would start with process measures to learn what's going to work in your organization, right, and what's not going to learn in your organization. And then at that same time, doing baseline assessment of what your desired long-term outcomes are. So that way you have a baseline to measure against, but you're not going to make a significant impact in long-term outcome measures and advanced care planning, because advanced care planning as a process, a continuation of a conversation over time, should really be a lifelong event, as you referred to earlier. But then do start thinking about what are the important long-term outcomes to achieve, and through hardwiring your systems change, automating as much as possible through your scaling, we would recommend that you think about a couple different categories of long-term outcomes. One are the benefits to the individuals you're serving. So for example, were their preferences known? And if so, were they honored? Were they able to avoid unwanted care, decrease decisional regret by a family member or the surrogate making decisions, earlier hospice referrals, benefits to their loved ones. So whoever that is defined as family to them, whoever that is, their improved understanding of a patient's preferences, their reduced stress, anxiety, or depression after surviving or in time of decision making. And then, of course, the benefits to the healthcare organization. And that's going to depend on who your executive leader is. Your CEO is going to want to see a different benefit, reduced length of stay or increased length of stay or reduced cost of care, those kinds of things.
Or improved satisfaction scores, right?
So your chief clinical officer is going to want to see improved satisfaction scores. And I can tell you anecdotally, the clinicians and support team around the clinicians that do this work and do it well, it's very satisfying. And we don't have research data, but anecdotally experience, we know that it increases retention of employees because they find this work to be so very satisfying, both, provider and other clinicians.
Well, retention is important in today's healthcare workforce.
Well, Stephanie,
I wanted to thank you for joining me today, and I wanted to ask you if you had any final remarks for our listeners.
Jennifer, that's a great question. I think first and foremost is putting the people that you're caring for first, and listening and asking exploratory questions rather than making assumptions. And for those of you that are in interdisciplinary team meetings, identify what that person's goal is first, and focus your discussion on the treatment plan with that in mind all of the time. And that's a great first step if you're not already doing that. If you're already doing that, looking at then what systems are failing you in that their goals aren't being known and honored, and begin working towards that system change. And so I'll end with that. And I want to thank you, Jennifer, for the invitation. This has been wonderful. This was my world, has been my world my entire career. And I love it. And I am just so honored to have been asked to share a little bit of information that hopefully will be helpful to some folks.
Well, it's CHOP's pleasure to have you join us today. And it's been delightful to talk to you. So I wanted to thank all of you out there in podcast land for taking time out of your day to plug into their podcast about advanced care planning. And hopefully you're going to take a small pearl of wisdom about advanced care planning away with you today. I know that I've learned a wealth of information during my interface with Stephanie before and during this podcast. So from me and the entire CHAP staff, stay safe and well, and thanks for all you do.